like to turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, very familiar verses, verses 7 through verse 10. Paul, of course, is doing the speaking. He says, "Unless I should be exalted above measure, through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities and reproaches and necessities and persecutions and distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong." Paul, in this passage, addresses the subject of personal trouble, personal affliction, and suffering. And in addressing the subject, he speaks of the purpose of these things. He speaks of the benefit of these things. And we know from 2 Corinthians 11, verses 23 through 28, that Paul was a man of many trials, many burdens. In those verses, he makes a list of some of the things that he had experienced in his life. But as you read the list there in 2 Corinthians 11, verses 23 through 28, when you read this list, these are not the things that come to your mind when you think of Paul. That is, Paul was not identified, he was not defined by these things, though he was a man of many hardships. His hardships and trials is not what he was defined by, but instead, when you think of Paul, you think about his love and service to the Lord. And I think there's a lesson in that, and the lesson is that we shouldn't be defined by what happens to us. We should not be defined by our trials, but we ought to be defined by our love and service to the Lord. And the only way that can happen, of course, is to rise above the trials and tribulations that come into our life. And the reason that Paul was not defined by his hardships brings us to another subject that Paul also addresses in our text, and that is God's power in his life. Paul learned how to be strong. He learned how to be strong through process of time. He had many broken places in his life, but Paul had learned how to be strong. And I believe he tells us some things here in these verses that will help us to experience and to be the recipients of God's power. And that ought to be the desire, that ought to be one of the desires of our life, is to experience the power of God in our life. Not just every now and then. Every child of God at some time in their life experiences the power of God. But that shouldn't just be an ever now and then experience. It ought to be an everyday experience. To experience the power of God every day in our lives. To feel the power of God resting upon our lives. And how is it that we're able to experience the power of God? How is it that we're able to be the recipients of the power of God? So we wanted to speak tonight on the enabling power in weakness. And we want to notice, first of all, that Paul makes reference in these verses to God's power. In verse 9, he says, "My strength," and the word "my" refers back to the Lord. So he's referring to the Lord's strength. And the word "strength" there is dunamis, which it simply means miraculous power. God has a miraculous power God has a miraculous energy. And he says, my strength is. Again, this is the Lord. My strength is. And we can stop right there and just meditate upon those three words. My strength is. But there is strength. There, God has strength. God has power. It's a miraculous power. It's an energy. It's a miraculous energy. And he says, my power or my strength is made perfect in weakness. What that means is that the strength of, that God imparts to his people is more completely manifested when you and I, his people, know our weakness, when we feel our weakness, when we learn the truth that without Jesus Christ, we can do nothing. That by ourselves, at best, we are weak. And it's when we know that, it's when we feel that, that God's power is able to be manifest in us. He also refers to the power of Christ there in verse 9, the latter part of the verse. He says, the power of Christ may rest upon me. And the word power is the same word that's translated strength. It's that word dunamis. But here, of course, it's referring to the wonder-working power of Christ, the wonder-working power of Christ to heal, the wonder-working power of Christ to do the impossible, to work miracles. And Paul says the power of Christ rests or abides or dwells upon me. And then he mentions the power, the strength of God a third time in verse 10. He says, for when I am weak, then I am strong. And he is strong, of course, by what? By the strength of the Lord. Not his own strength. He is strong by the power of Christ. So Paul is saying, I am powerful. I have the God's power in my life. I'm powerful. I'm capable. And it's all due to the strength and the power of the Lord. Now, that brings us to the point, how God brings us to the place where you and I can experience the power of God in our lives, where we can be the recipients of God's power. The truth is, if we're going to experience God's power, God has to bring us to the place where we're able to experience it. If we're going to be the recipients of God's power, God has to bring us to the place where we are able to be the recipients of such. First thing God does in order to bring us to this position is that he protects us and delivers us from ourselves. Notice in verse 7, he says twice, lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations. And then the last part of the verse, he repeats it. He says, lest I should be exalted above measure. Because Paul had been privileged by God to behold and to understand truths that many others did not understand, that many others were not privileged to behold, because of the special favors that God gave Paul, Paul was in danger of pride. And he refers to it twice here in verse 7. And it's true of us. God cannot bless us without you and I being in danger of pride. God cannot show us any truth without you and I being in danger of pride. That says much about our nature. But twice, Paul uses the words, lest I. Lest I. In other words, God did something in Paul's life. In this case, God allowed something to enter Paul's life for the purpose of Paul avoiding the risk of something that would be detrimental to him. And if we are going to experience the power of God in our lives, if we're going to be in a position to be the recipients of God's power, we have to be protected from ourselves. Because we will do the very things that are detrimental to the power of God being manifest in our life. So God protected Paul from himself, lest I be exalted above measure. Also, we see in order to deliver Paul from himself and bring him to the place where he could be a recipient of God's enabling power, something was given to Paul. Something was given to him. We read again in verse 7, there was given to me, and me is personal. There was given to me personally a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me. Something very real was given to Paul. The reason it was given to him was so that he would not be exalted above measure, so that he would not be taken down in pride. The reason it was given to him was so that God could bless him, so that Paul could experience the power of God in his life. And so God gave him something. He gave him something that you and I do not ask for. He gave him a thorn in the flesh and the messenger of Satan to buffet him. And what God gave to Paul was very, very real. And again, it was personal. And Paul goes on and he describes this trial. First of all, he describes it as that which was given to him. There was given to me. Now, it may have been carried out by Satan, since it says a messenger of Satan to buffet me. It may have been carried out by Satan, but it was conceived by God, just as in the case of Job. God's behind it all. God's behind everything that happens. That's the sovereignty of God. So whatever it was that afflicted Paul, it was part of God's plan for Paul's life. More importantly, it was part of God's way to put Paul in a position where he could be the recipient of God's power. To put Paul in a position where he could experience the enabling power of God in his life. So it pleased God to allow and to appoint a trial in Paul's life. And suffering and trials do not come by chance. I don't think there's a whole lot of people that believe that tonight. In the book of Job, chapter 5 and verse 6, we read, affliction cometh not forth of the dust, neither doth trouble spring out of the ground. These things don't just happen. They don't just drop out of the sky and you happen to be the one in the way when it falls. There's a God behind it all. Affliction comes by the will of God. Affliction comes by the appointment of God. Paul said in 1 Thessalonians 3 and verse 3, let no man be moved by these afflictions. For ye yourselves know that ye were appointed thereunto. You were appointed thereunto. Paul says here, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to buffet me. Now you'll notice he does not complain. He does not say or imply that this thorn in the flesh was sent in cruelty, that it was sent, that it was unfair. He does not view it as some intruder in his life. He calls it a gift. He said, there was given unto me. This is not an intrusion. There was given to me. And it was given by God as a gift and as a favor to enable Paul to be able to experience the enabling power of God. To put Paul in a position where he could be the recipient of God's power. Now, Paul also gives a description of the nature of the trial. He uses two words to describe the trial. The word thorn and the word buffet. The word thorn conveys the idea of something that's common. Conveys the idea of something that is very painful. Something that pierces. Something that tears. Something that's irritating. Something that is nagging and persistent. He also uses the word buffet to describe his trouble. And the word buffet means to strike with a fist, to beat down, to pound upon. It is a verb, and it's in the present tense, meaning that it is continual in nature. It is something that persists. It keeps on. So whatever the trouble, whatever the trial, whatever the suffering, the affliction, and the difficulty that Paul was experiencing, it was something that caused him great pain. It was something that was very piercing to him. And it was something that was constant. It was continual. In other words, it came to stay. It came to stay. You have to realize that some trials come to stay. That is, throughout this life. They're eventually going to be gone when we get to heaven. But there are some trials that aren't going to go away. Don't tell somebody, well, it'll go away. You don't know that. It may stay. It may stay for the rest of your life. So you'd better learn how to deal with it. Because it may not go away. It may not be gone tomorrow. It may not be gone next week. It may not be gone next year. It may still be with you 20 years from now, 25 years from now. You say, well, Brother Dan, that's not very encouraging. But that's the fact. That's the truth. Some trials are here to stay. As far as this life is concerned. But remember who's behind it all, and we're getting to the point where there is a purpose in all of this. Paul speaks of the place of his pain. He says it was a thorn in the flesh. That means to me that it afflicted him physically. It was something that caused him great discomfort, a thorn in the flesh. That's something that is discomforting. Don't measure God's love by your comfort. That's not how you measure the love of God. Don't measure God's love by how much goes your way. That's not how you measure the love of the Lord. Trials or thorns and buffetings, like trials, can be physical, they can be emotional, they can be spiritual, they can be all of those. But this particular trial seemed to be more physical in nature. And suffering can come in many shapes. We can hurt on a lot of levels, all of which are not visible to the naked eye. Everyone here hurts in some way. Not all is visible, to the eye. You may say, well, they seem fine to me. Oh, but you can't see everything. You don't see it all. Everyone here has some hurt, has some hurts. Paul did not name his thorn. And yet, if you pick up a commentary, most of them will spend pages discussing what Paul's thorn in the flesh was. But the truth is, if God wanted us to know what it was, he would have told us. So as far as I'm concerned, it's just a colossal waste of time to try to figure out what his exact trial was. You read the commentaries and some will say it was epilepsy and they'll make an argument for it. Some will say it was malaria and they'll make an argument for that. Some will say, oh, it was just various temptations. It was infirmities of the mind. It was lustful thoughts. And the most common is that Paul suffered from the gout. And they'll go on for pages presenting their argument. But Paul did not identify the thorn. And I think there's a blessing in that as well. Because had Paul named his thorn, then you and I might conclude that the promises of God associated with it was just for that particular thorn. But since he didn't name it, then the promises of God associated with Paul's thorn in the flesh applies to all thorns. So I believe there's a blessing in the fact that God didn't tell us what it is, and I'm not going to try to figure out what his thorn in the flesh was. I don't need to know. But it is a blessing to know that whatever my thorn is, the promises of God to Paul are good for me. That's what encourages me. Paul describes, as we've already said, the purpose and design of the trial. And that was, lest I should be exalted above God's, above measure. When God allows trials or sends trials into our lives that keep us from sinning, that's a gift. That's a blessing. If God sends a trial in your life that keeps you from one sin, that's a blessing. Keeps you from a sin that you would have committed had he not sent the trial. Paul would have been overcome with pride had not God sent this thorn in his life. So it was a blessing. When God appoints difficulties and struggles for us that help us spiritually, that's a gift. And as you read the account here, it's obviously something that helped Paul spiritually. Anything God does that helps us spiritually is a gift. Anything that God sends in our life that puts us in a position where we can enjoy the blessings of God and where we can experience the power of God, that's a gift. That's not an intrusion. That's not a curse. That's not just a run of bad luck. That's a gift. When God does these things in our lives. And we need to look at them as gifts. This is why Paul said, there was given unto me. There was given unto me. It almost, when he says those words, there was given unto me, it's almost like I'm special. God has given me something. A thorn in the flesh. And the reason he gave me this thorn, because had he not given me this thorn, I would have been overtaken, I would have been swallowed up in pride. But to prevent that, God gave me something. That's a gift. And this would put Paul in the position where he could be the recipient of the power of God. And notice, Paul does not say, a thorn in the flesh happened unto me. He says, it was given to me. Not just happened. That's the language we like to use. Such and such happened to me. Well, it didn't just happen. God did it. God was in on it. And Paul realizes this, and he says, there was given unto me. This isn't something that just happened because I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. This was given unto me. So trials are not a curse. But in Paul's case here, we see that they're a blessing. The thorns and the buffetings, if they regulate our flesh, serve as a reminder how weak we are and how much we need God, that is not a curse. That's a gift. That's a gift of the Lord. If God sends something in our life that causes us to realize that we need Him, that's a gift. And the sad thing is, because of our depraved nature, you and I do not realize how much we need Him unless God sends some hardships in our life. We do not remember that how weak we are, we get self-confident, we get independent of God, unless God every now and then sends something into our life to wake us up and to remind us. So therefore, that's a gift. That's a gift. And that's why Paul said, there was given unto me. Now, this trial, this thorn in the flesh, this buffeting, drove Paul to a realization of his weakness, which in turn drove him to prayer. The truth is, you're not going to really pray until you realize what you need. As long as you think you can handle it, I guarantee you, you do not pray like you ought to. You have to come to the realization, without me, I can do nothing. Amen. And when you realize that, now you can pray. And, sad to say, God has to send thorns into our life to bring us to that point. He goes on here in verse 8, he says, For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. Now notice, Paul began to pray for something that he had not before prayed for. Isn't that how it works? God sends a trial into our life, and now we find ourselves praying for something or praying about something that we had not before prayed about. You might even find yourself praying for people that before that you would have never prayed for. God had to send a thorn in your life to cause you to realize your weakness. Realizing your weakness, you begin to pray. So God gives him this thorn. Notice that he does not give way to fretfulness. He does not give way to worry. But he prayed. He does not become sullen. He does not become dejected. But he prays. He doesn't quarrel with God. He doesn't murmur with God. He prays. He said, I besought the Lord for this thing. This thorn in the flesh, this messenger of Satan, drove Paul to prayer. That's a blessing. Anything that drives you and I to prayer is a good thing. It's sad that God has to send things into our lives before you and I will get serious about really praying. But when he does send those things, if it truly drives us to prayer, that's a good thing. And I would hate to think of trials and afflictions coming into my life being for nothing. And if I don't learn from the trials and afflictions, if I don't grow stronger, if I don't become more spiritually mature, what's it for? It's a waste. I would sure hate to think of going through trials and tribulations for nothing. So, when these trials come, go to God. Go to God in prayer. Now notice, he describes his prayer was a very precise prayer. He says, for this thing. That is, Paul specifically prayed for this thing. Now, by nature again, you and I will pray in generalities until God sends something into our life. The truth is, unless God gives us something particular to pray for, which usually is something that has a direct effect upon our lives, unless it has an effect on our lives, we just pray in generalities, if we pray at all. But Paul said, I got specific for this thing. So Paul's prayer was definite. Paul now had a purpose in his prayer. Examine your prayer life. Many times our prayer life has no purpose. Again, it's just generalities. But I guarantee you, God sends a trial into your life or a trial into a loved one's life. Again, it has to be something that has a direct bearing on me. Your prayer life takes on purpose. Now it has purpose. And Paul said for this thing. But notice also his prayer became a pleading. He said, I besought the Lord. That is, I beseeched the Lord. I begged the Lord. There was a sense of urgency. There was a sense of passion. There was a sense of vigor and diligence in his prayer. And unless God sends trials into our lives, we are very lazy in our prayer life. When God gives us something to pray for, and again, we usually can't be very urgent or very passionate until it affects us. Then we can pray. Then we can truly pray. But then I want you to notice it was a persistent prayer. He says thrice. That is, I didn't just pray concerning this thing one time or two times, but I continued. How many times God sends a trial into a life, that person realizes their weakness, they begin to pray, they begin to show some signs of spirituality, the Lord blesses, removes the trial, and boom, they're right back where they were. And it don't take long. Give them a day. If they're really spiritual, 24 hours, and they're right back where they are. That's what we are by nature. And even when God gives us a persistent trial, if we're not careful, we'll pray earnestly for a while, and then pretty soon, God hasn't answered yet, God hasn't given us what we want, and now we begin to feel sorry for ourselves, and we're no longer praying. But he says, I continue praying. So you see, this thing that was given Paul really was a blessing. And then we see there was a personal reply from God. He prayed, and in verse 9 it says, and he, that is the Lord, said unto me. Said unto me. That is a personal reply. And it is a manifestation that God hears the pleadings of his people. How many times people will say, oh, I prayed and I prayed and I prayed and I prayed and God still hasn't answered. Then guess what? Keep on praying. Don't stop. Don't use that for a reason to stop. Use that for a reason to pray more earnestly. Keep on praying. And this is what Paul did. And then finally, he got a personal reply from God. And it wasn't the reply that Paul was necessarily looking for, because he was praying that this thing would depart from me. But God's reply was, Paul, I'm not going to take it away, but I'm going to give you something that is going to enable you to get through it. And not only will it enable you to get through it, it will put you in a position where you will be able to experience and be the recipient of God's power. And the answer that he gave unto him was, my grace is sufficient for thee. And I like the first and last words of that phrase, my and thee. That connects us and God. What is it that connects us with God? It's grace. And he says, my grace is sufficient. That is, my grace is more than enough for what you're going through. And that's true of every one of us. That's true no matter what our trial be. God's grace is sufficient for thee. It is sufficient for you right now. So therefore, just keep on going to the throne of grace. Now notice lastly, this personal assurance, my grace is sufficient for thee, led Paul to an attitude that allowed him to experience the enabling power of God. So God informs him that his strength is imparted when his people know and feel their weakness. Verse 9, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. And then Paul speaks. Most, which speaks of degree, most gladly, that is, with pleasure, willingly, readily, and ungrudgingly, most gladly, therefore. The therefore goes back to, my grace is sufficient for thee, my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory, or I will take delight in my infirmities. And then notice what it says. That. You see, his attitude is, I will take delight in my infirmities. That. In order that the power of Christ may rest upon me. You see, Paul is brought to a position where the power of Christ can rest upon him. He has been brought to a position of weakness where he realizes how weak he is, how frail he is. And if you and I want to be the recipients of God's power, we have to live in that spirit. We have to live in that attitude. Without him, I can do nothing. I am weak. I'm weak. I need him. And God sends us trials to cause us to realize that. And therefore, we ought to gladly accept those trials. He goes on in verse 10 in closing, therefore, I take pleasure. The therefore goes back to the fact that the power of Christ may rest upon me. I've been brought to a point where the power of Christ can rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure. He says, I take some joy. I take pleasure in infirmities, which is referring to physical weakness. He says, I take pleasure in it because God's power is manifest in our weakness. In reproaches, which is talking about scorn. In necessities, which talks about our everyday needs, in persecutions, in distresses, which speaks of the mental side, it speaks of anguish and the suffering of pain. He says, I take pleasure in these things for Christ's sake, for or because when I'm weak, then am I strong. And what that means is when I realize that I'm weak, that's when I seek the Lord. That's when I lean upon Him. And that's when I'm the strongest. You are the strongest when you come to your rope's end and realize I can do nothing. Amen. That's when you're the strongest. You are the strongest when you come to the realization I feel so helpless, there's nothing I can do. That's when you are the strongest. Because it's then that you will truly lean upon God. That's why many times God has to take things away from us. Because you and I, by nature, we will depend on things, whether it be a job, whether it be material possession, it doesn't matter. Our nature is we will depend on these things, we will become dependent on these things, and we'll even take glory in these things. So God removes them all to cause us to realize have nothing. Cause us to lean upon Christ. And that is when we're the strongest. Again, we've used the illustration many times, but many times someone is by the bed of someone who is dying, maybe a young child, and a parent will say, I just feel so helpless. Amen. Praise the Lord. That's the best place to be. Because you're going to pray. You're going to depend on the Lord. And now you can experience the power of Christ. So God does these things to bring us to a position where we can have the enabling power of Christ. And Christ's power is an enabling power. You ask many people how they got through certain things, and they'll say, just the grace of God. And that's the truth. I mean, that's all you can attribute it to. It certainly wasn't anything in them. They didn't have it in them. They didn't have that kind of strength. So we ought to be thankful when God brings us to a position where we can experience the power of God. But what's so sad is God constantly brings us into those positions, and then we go back to our old ways, and then God's got to do something else to bring us to that position again. You know, I believe if we would just stay there, we could save ourselves a lot of trials. We could save ourselves a lot of troubles if we just stay where we ought to stay. But that's not our nature. We forget. We have short memories, and we go back to trusting in things or whatever, trusting in ourselves. But when I'm weak, that's when I'm the strongest. So it's not anything to be ashamed of, to be weak, because those are the people that are the strongest. So may every day we wake up and realize I'm weak. I can do nothing. I need Him. I need Him. I've got to have Him. And at that point, that is when we're the strongest. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in a verse.